Welcome, and you're listening to a Queued Up Media Group production of Geekologist Radio. We are a division of the Ninja Pancake family of podcast. And now...
Shut up and sit down.
What's up, everybody? It's Brandon, and welcome to Geekologist Radio. We're here to take you through our queue into our gaming systems, and we're going to ride our hype train from the past all the way into the future. And let's introduce our crew for tonight. We got Mr. Wanky, Two Wolves, Chris.
I am Groot.
No. That's played out. That's three episodes now.
I am Groot.
Okay, that works. Damien, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Really, what Chris said is he said I'm Groot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just to clarify.
Clarifying that up for me. I was totally confused. I forgot my Grootinese lessons last night, so I was a little bit behind in the segment.
I'm Groot.
Speaking of segments, let's get into our first segments: error and emissions.
All right. First up, we got hit up on Twitter by BlueShark45. He says, at Geekologist Radio, your podcast, episode 38, don't you think the chain made a Goosebumps moment in the movie? He goes, hashtag, I know you mentioned the tunes weren't as good as one. Brandon?
Okay. We talked about this a little bit right before the podcast. You could have the worst song in the world. If the movie uses that song correctly, then it's good. But what we were trying to say is that the whole soundtrack in general just was not as good, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, that's kind of the same thing with me. It wasn't like, there's like a couple songs in it that I heard that I was like, oh yeah, this is awesome. But then the rest just didn't really hit. The other error is that last week when I talked about the movie Viral, I said it has started out with a political thing. Well, the political thing was that it uses footage of Barack Obama talking about the Ebola virus outbreak. Now, when he was talking about it, they kept the Ebola part out so that it made it seem like the political officials were talking about the worm virus in it. So that was the political part that I meant by it as my segue in. Really not too political, but it was cool that they used actual footage in the way that they did, so it kind of made it feel more realistic within the movie. And that is it for error and omissions, as far as I know this week.
All right, now, so what we're going to do is we're going to take Mr. Niddledick, and we're going to go right into our queue.
Creepy.
We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on.
All right, first up, as I said, regardless of what these glorious bastards around me have said, we're going to talk some Alien Covenant. This movie.
Now, what I want to know is more about that bus that you were on. The Big Woody is what they called it, wasn't it? Didn't we talk about this last week? I had to come in here and fill in for you on the episode because you forgot to record your outro. I mean, like, they put me on the spot. I don't know what was going on. I'm just really upset right now. I miss you.
Well, ma'am, I think that the time together, I think you your voice got a little deeper there.
I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, well, back to Alien Covenant. And I will never forget to record my outro if I have to leave early ever again, mind you. I say that now. But so Alien Covenant came out. I had a chance to go in and check it out. I'm a huge Alien and Predator verse fan. This movie, It's hit or miss. There's not really a middle ground right now with it. People either love it or they hate it.
Just want to let you know that your opinions are your own and they do not reflect the rest of Geekologist Radio, the podcast.
Exactly. All right. So I got a chance to go see Alien Covenant. With this film, it's got basically, it's got two camps. The one camp is you either love it or you really, really
two camps.
Two camps.
I thought you said two yams.
You assholes.
I was wondering if this is the Woody bus again. Cams and yams.
Anyway,
are you predatoring on some aliens?
Oh, shit. the film premise and everything, it basically felt like Prometheus, only instead of having a focus on the creators, they put in the focus on the alien itself. It lacked a lot of the character driven experiences that were in Alien and just following Ripley and stuff like that, because you don't have a core hero yet that you can say, oh, this is who I'm following and rallying behind, because these movies are actually fairly grim because they all have to lead up to the Alien franchise. However, Ridley Scott, because Ridley Scott hates Alien 4 and the hive-born alien that comes at the end, but in making this film, he actually paid homage to that film and actually made it seem like it's accurate part for the series, with the first renditions of the alien xenomorph being not having the exoskeleton on the outside to protect them and being fleshy. A lot of different changes that are hopefully going to come and be explained later on down the road. There is going to be another one made by Ridley Scott. I would rather his son take over or something else, just to be a little different. The place where I am on the middle ground with it is I enjoyed the film. I will definitely go see the next one. But if I had my choice, 100% would have rather have seen Alien 5 by Neil Blomkamp. The fact that I won't probably get to see that film because of the Ridley Scott versions that are coming out actually really pisses me off. The other thing is that I am actually super happy that because of seeing how he went with this film, I am so glad that there was a different director for the new Blade Runner film. That's all I'm going to say. Enjoyment factor, I'll give it. I enjoyed it. I'll buy it because it's Alien, but I'd only give it like a 6.5 actually overall score, because there were so many things that I would have changed as a fan. But it's definitely fun to go see, just to see the tech. The other thing that they did that was really good though was they actually, because the alien eyes, they paid a lot of homage to H.R. Giger, which I appreciated him as an artist. Brennan.
Wait, what did you say that your rating was on this?
A 6.5.
As much as you've been toting and shouting from the rooftops over the last few months about this, did the Care Bear die? I just want to know, did the Care Bear die?
I'm not a Care Bear about something that if I'm a fan of something and I feel that it was wronged, don't even get me into Flat Out, okay? I love Flat Out, and Flat Out 4 sucks. It's definitely needed to have some changes done. Definitely look forward to see Blade Runner because Ridley Scott didn't direct it. I think that he needs to pass on the torch to his son. His son's prequel to this was better directed than the actual film itself.
Man, the amount of salt towards Ridley Scott is unreal around here. Was he able to accomplish anything with his movie?
He did. He accomplished by showing stuff like just more with the development, the organic development of the alien. But the problem is that he's created this mythos of what, you know, we're supposed to expect. Now, being a fan and being able to go say through evolution and stuff, I can come up with reasons why it takes a longer gestation period. Because he's like, oh, nope, it's like 5 minutes and boom, the alien bursts out. That's not how it's supposed to be. But if you want to go in and if you want to try to champion the movie, there's a lot of ways you could argue it. I would need, I'm going to do that in a later episode of the Backlog Chronicles to be able to go talk about that. Honestly, this movie doesn't deserve that championing, but I will do it in a different show where its premises are. But the alien design was awesome. They actually go through and they give you the, you actually see a couple point of views from the alien itself. And in the original film, H.R. Giger put a clear dome on it, and you could see a skull with eye sockets inside of it if you actually were able to see, not in the actual film, but actually outside of it, how they created it. And so because of that, that was kind of homage saying, oh, you would see a membrane over the front of it because of the dome. So that was a kind of cool touch. Some fans are really not liking that, but if you know your whole alien background and everything, that's an actually cool little Easter egg. But overall, yeah, it's worthwhile to see in theaters for the special effects and the sounds. It's just the characters were not developed enough. They're idiots. Excuse me for the bleeping, but the characters, they're, you don't walk around by yourself if you got aliens that are coming around eating your freaking face off.
No. That's a typical horror movie.
But what, no, but not in aliens. Aliens, they're typically, the people are smart. They stay grouped up and then they get picked off one by one, but they protect each other. Not here. No.
Okay, I'm sorry. Any movie where you see a bunch of alien type eggs and you sat around like, oh, wow, wonder what these are, and not kill it first, you're stupid. This is a typical horror movie. Done. Hey, to quote Mike Abstracticus, done.
It's just interesting because everything, you keep saying it's worthwhile to see, but you've given me every reason not to watch this movie.
Okay, sorry. It's worthwhile if you like special effects, if you are a fan of the Alien franchise. It's worthwhile to see, to know the direction that they're kind of going. But the problem is that this is something that Cajun would hate. It leaves you with more questions than answers. We were hoping that this one would answer a lot of the questions that Prometheus led. Instead, it wind up leaving you with basically the same questions.
Just because they want to make another one.
Yeah, when you do a trilogy, that's exactly what happens.
Yeah, but there's so many staying questions that unless it goes to a different director, I'm worried that you're not going to get the answers. Like if a different director picked this up right now, you could have an amazing third act, and it would make all the rest of
the
stuff worthwhile.
When Robert Zemeckis did Back to the Future, I didn't know if Michael J. Fox was going to make it back until the third one. So it left me more questions than answers in the first two. Same thing with this. The third one's going to bring it home.
Okay. All right. True.
Moving on. Next up, we have Master of None, Season 2. Take it away, Chris.
Take it away, Chris. Brandon, I know you've watched this episode. This whole season. Yes?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Yeah. So
I had it watched before you even started on it.
Master of None Season 2 is exactly that. It does a bunch of things okay, but it is a Master of None. Aziz is back and in full effect. And in this season, first of all, the first episode was kind of crazy. Actually, the first two episodes were kind of crazy, especially one of the episodes that was done. To Faust's credit, we talked about it. The was it episode 2?
Fifth.
Was it the fifth?
Five.
No, episode 2 is the one where it was muted.
No, that was 5.
Was that episode 5? Oh, yeah. Man, it's crazy. So in any case, there's like 3 of these episodes out of this season of 10 that are just way off the Richter scale. It doesn't, like, they don't fit with the rest of the season. It's like they're there, but you're not really sure why they're there. And his character is put into a situation where he has moved to Italy and is learning how to be a maker of pasta. And he meets a girl who works in the same shop named Francesca. She has a boyfriend. He goes back to New York City to, which, by the way, this was awesome because when he is heading up the cupcake show, I was like, this is really cool. Like, I could see this kind of show. This is a real legit show. Like, what was the name of the cupcake show? Do you remember?
Cupcake.
Was it Cupcake Wars? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that show.
So he heads up Cupcake Wars, and then he hooks himself up with a chef. And so he and the
Chef Jeff,
and he and Chef Jeff, they offer to do Cupcake Wars for extended 7-year contract. He decides that that's not the direction he wants to go. but he kind of wants to do a basically a twins version of the Travel Channel's Let's Eat. So yeah, he and Chef Jeff. And meanwhile, he's been pining away at Francesca and been pining away and pining away. And they flirt the whole entire time. And then it comes down to the last two episodes. And I'm not going to tell you which direction it goes. However, both sides are left. We'll just say that both sides are left. It's kind of left up in the air. It's given you an opportunity. I don't want to give away the plot ending. When I say it's left up in the air, it can go in either direction, basically.
Well, you do find out that Francesca is engaged to the boyfriend. And so while the boyfriend is in America, traveling around to different cities, trying to sell, what was it, rock, granite?
Yeah, like yeah.
Tile. Francesca doesn't have much to do. She didn't want to stay home. So she's hanging out with Dev. And Dev's taking her on all these sightseeing and stuff like that. And Dev gets extremely attached. But the episode 5 that Chris was mentioning was a really interesting one. It was for a movie premiere that everybody was going to go see. And they took you through the lives of 5 or 6 different groups of individuals. And one of them was a lady who was deaf. Cannot hear a word. And so on that part of that episode, for her segment, they muted all audio. There was no audio at all.
That was for 10-12 minutes of the episode.
Exactly, yeah. I thought it was amazing. Just that they showed the perspective of that person's life through that person, the way that they interpret things, the way they see things, obviously not hear things, but the way they communicate and everything else.
Now, that's the other thing with this is that Aziz has come out and said that he's not counting out a season 3, but he's taking the Louis approach with it, and he'll get there when he gets there.
So it was interesting too in this season, because my favorite character of the entire season is Arnold. His buddy Arnold is so funny. He's like, "Ooh, you give her a little kissy face." He's like, "Kissy face emoji? I like it." And it's just, he does all these weird, the way he talks is so weird.
Is this Arnold or is this Pauly Shore? I can't get it. This was a Pauly Shore kind of movement
you did there. It does seem like
and
that, yeah.
He's like, "Tell me more detail." And it's so interesting. His character, I think, is really interesting. When the season ended, and I'm a big fan, actually, even though, I think it was kind of weird that both seasons together, I still would watch another season. I'm kind of invested that way. I found out that Aziz said that, hold your horses. This is a time sink for him, because not only is he write, direct, and act, it's just so much giving of himself that, if this is going to happen, it's going to be years down the road. There's no anticipation for a season 3 right now.
So, Chris, can I get you just to say Weege the Juice?
No.
Please?
So, scale of 1 to 10, again, I would probably give Master of None about what I gave it last week. I think I gave it a 7 or 7.5. That's probably right where I'd put this up. I mean, I was invested by the last 3 episodes. I really wanted him to get with Francesca. The episode where he was in the car by himself and they let that episode linger for 5 minutes of him in the back of a Uber, when he has to let her leave and go back to her boyfriend, and it's dead silence in the Uber, and it's just him, just, hand on his mouth, hand on his head, thinking, just emotionally crushed, because it's a girl that he really, really likes, and he knows that she likes him back, but there's nothing they can do about it right now, I thought was probably the best part of this entire season, were those 5 minutes. The way he acted, because... going back to what Cajun said last week, the acting in this is not fantastic. I mean, it's not great. But that moment in the back of that cab, or the back of the Uber for about 5 minutes, and Fouts can attest, it felt awkward. At first I was like, why? How long are they going to keep panned on this shot? And they just...
Yeah, it actually felt like a real-life situation. It was actually happening. The situation between the two of them was the real thing.
Was the real thing. And he was just crushed. He's like, what do I do? Where do I go? I have all this going on in me and I can't express it. And I don't know if she, I think she feels the same way, but I don't know if she feels the same way. And so you want to say something, but you don't want to say something. You want to make a move, but you can't make a move. And so, I don't know, in that moment, in those 5 minutes, I actually felt for him and I felt for the show. If they could kind of take that and make that a show, like, I think I would be much more invested in this. But in any case, a good solid 7, 7.5, and we could definitely move on to the next segment.
Okay, the only other thing in our queue is I've been watching the crap out of Breaking Bad, but that's an old show, so I'm digging it. The only reason I started watching it is because of Mr. Cajun's Better Call Saul. So he talked me into it. I'm watching it.
One other thing we can put down in our queue that will come up, I'm sure Cajun will talk. We'll be talking about this again, but we won't be having Cajun talk anymore about The Get Down. Netflix has officially canceled The Get Down. Sad times for Mr. Cajun. He won't be rapping, but he does weddings, guys.
All right. So next up, we're gonna get into some Game On. All right, so first up on Game On, we got Damien with some Portal Knights.
So I talked about the trial a little while back, and I'm now playing and getting ready to write up a review on the actual game itself. The full game, lot more of a depth of experience. Boss battles are pretty crazy. Boss battles feel a lot like a 3D. It's a lot like a 3D environment. Version of the Legend of Zelda, like Link to the Past, not like to where you feel like you like in Ocarina of Time or any of those more recent ones, but still has that feeling though of those big oversized grand bosses that you're facing. The cartoon graphics on it are still pretty slick. Some of the mobs get a little bit like Dragon Quest kind of style, like you got slime orange and slime green, just different color versions of the things. But all in all, I sunk some serious time into this game already. I've been building up a little house, building up all that stuff. And what's cool about it is, like, instead of like learning a spell in a game, you actually have to go and craft you have to get the craft materials to build your spell. And the attacks and stuff are pretty cool. I got a chance to play with my son, and he really enjoys it. My daughter's really good at it, and that's probably all in all where a lot of my fun's coming from on it, is having a game that can hold their attention, that isn't as just blocky as Minecraft, has a little more story to it, because you can go on quests and things. And that in itself has been really enjoyable. They are adding more. They're going to be patching in more quests, and when that comes into play, I think it'll add a lot more to the game. But for $20, you can't go wrong with it. It's you'll have a lot of fun, especially if you have kids. If you have kids, definitely need to get on this if they like Minecraft. Out of a score of 1 through 10.
Your cheeks are getting so red.
Oh, shit. So, for the audience at home listening, Chris and I have been texting back and forth while Damien's explaining his experience with Portal Knights, and I randomly said, okay, just start spamming the unicorn rainbow coming out of your ass emoji. And so right there when he's about to give his review, he started spamming the unicorn emoji. Don't kill us.
It's spark. The thing is farting rainbows.
The thing about games like this, like if you give me a game where I can, like my main go to games if I'm not playing a game with like you guys are survival games. I like horror games to an extent, but it's survival games and games where I can build, like with blocks and stuff. I'm a huge fan of Legos, love that stuff. So anything I can build, and then you throw in the fact that of a game that I can play with my kids, that instantly, like, that's a go-to for me. And I love fantasy stuff. So Portal Knights has all that stuff. They need to add if they're because they keep talking about it being quest driven and all that stuff. It does have quests, but they are not as deep as they advertise.
That is definitely what she said.
But it's a solid 7. If they go in with more like quests and stuff like that, it's only going to go up from there. But yeah, it's 4 players. You get a team of 4 players together. They do have dungeons. The dungeons are pretty dang fun. So you get a team group of 4. You can have a lot of fun with this.
All right, so next up we got a game that you should not, I repeat, should not play with your children. Or even in the same room as your kids. The game that we're about to talk about.
Possibly even spouse.
Yeah, that might be on the dangerous side as well. The game is called Shadow Warrior 2. This is the, I believe, actual 4th iteration of the game. The original game came out from 3D Realms back in 97. And then it had a small sequel, and this was just basically for PC. And then, I think 2 years ago, Shadow Warrior came out for Xbox One and possibly PS4. I can't remember because I didn't research because I'm a bad podcast host. My bad. Anyways, so this has always been one of my favorite games because my dad introduced this game to me, who you guys all met on our Star Wars episode that we had a while back. And so we played the crap out of this game back on computer mouse, and then it came to Xbox, tried it again. There's lots of throwbacks to 8-bit Shadow Warrior, 16-bit Shadow Warrior built into the Xbox One version of it that are like hidden rooms and things. But one of the best features about Shadow Warrior 2, which is the new one that just came out, is A, the launch price gives it to you for half off, plus you get the Shadow Warrior 1, as well as there's now multiplayer. And the multiplayer is a blast, just going through with one of your friends and destroying everything.
And, man, I'm just going to say, the stuff in this game, if you like Duke Nukem, if you like Duke Nukem at all, Lo Wang, I almost think, beats Duke Nukem when it comes to his quips.
Lo Wang would whoop Duke Nukem's ass.
However, how awesome would a Lo Wang Duke Nukem buddy mash 'em up game be?
Holy cow! Look like Duke Nukem.
You know, being a long time Duke Nukem fan, I actually have to admit I would go with Lo Wang. Lo Wang's like his comments and stuff. Like you got to have thick skin though. You cannot take anything that this game says and like be serious about it because it's definitely like there's nothing that's outside of the realm of them to make fun of. There's a sword. There is a damn sword that I took a screenshot of. That is a bound cock and balls.
I like sword. That's a personal weapon.
Yeah, it is. It's like you know, I mean, and granted, yeah, Duke Nukem, you go around and you beat alien walls up that are made of boobs. But still, it's like, it's just the ridiculousness of it is crazy. Now, this is a game that I also got a chance to play at PAX last year. And to be able to play it alongside with one of my best friends, it's, you know, you can't beat that. That's why games like Destiny are so fun. But the thing is, right now, we got to wait for Destiny 2. If you're waiting and you're looking for a good buddy game that you can just go through, you can replay and you can just shoot things, a la, you know, going on patrol.
Or using a chainsaw or a nail gun. Or, let's see, what else is there?
Dual swords.
Dual Uzis. Shotguns. Yeah,
there's nothing like being surrounded, being attacked, and then pulling out a chainsaw, and then watching the jibs fly, and then you and your buddy are just covered in blood. It is this game.
Like we said, do not play this with your children around.
No,
it's not a good idea.
You know, you have games that do procedurally generated levels. This game touts procedurally generated gore.
Extremely.
Oh,
I love this game though. It's definitely day one purchase for me. When it came out, I seen it. It was half price. It was only $35, normally $69. Plus, it came with a digital version of the original Shadow Warrior game. You really can't beat that, because that game right now is currently selling for $29.99, so that's a huge value.
Yeah, and I believe the sales, well, actually, I think the sales still go on for another, by the time this episode comes out, I think you'll still have a day or two to pick it up. But it's definitely something worthwhile to get your hands on if you're waiting for something in between. Chris, do you got anything? Have you been playing anything on mobile or anything like that? Anything on Twitch?
Nothing.
Not Twitch, Switch.
Nothing. Honestly, this week I've been so busy that I haven't had an opportunity to play anything.
You've been playing Mario Run.
That's what I was...
I see your toad count. Don't even start lying to me.
That's just... I played at work. Like, if I have some free time, I played at work. But, yeah, that's the only thing I've had an opportunity to get my hands on this week. Just been there's been a lot of stuff going on at work and home, so I just haven't had an opportunity. This upcoming week looks like I'm going to be a little bit... have a little more free time. And then I have off pretty much the entire week of E3, so...
Okay, and that's the thing, guys. E3... E3, we will be doing a lot, so I'm sure we'll have a reaction episode. If not, are we doing the live stream?
I'm doing a live stream, so if everybody else
okay,
is coming,
if you're doing the live stream,
if everybody else
going,
is coming
I'm
on
there.
For the ride, I plan on reacting immediately from that Xbox presser.
Okay, so guys, Xbox press briefing. You hear it now that we will be live. We'll make sure we tweet that out.
Immediately following it. So follow us on Twitter if you want to get the info on where you'll be able to find us. And
following?
All
we'll be live while watching.
That's what I'm... I don't know about all that now.
I'm off Monday evening, too, so I'll be live and having discussions about the PlayStation 4 that Monday evening, too, because PlayStation runs theirs really late in the evening. They tend to run it right roughly around 9 o'clock Eastern. So I'll be having a conversation about that, too, because... for what we're hearing, there's going to be some information. I don't want to go get in hype train stuff. That is hype train stuff, so we'll talk about it then.
Okay.
Ancient Chinese secret.
So real quick, back to Shadow Warrior 2. You actually may hear little quips of Lo Wang throughout this entire episode. So if you're wondering what these sound effects that you've been hearing are, now you know. So next up, let's go ahead and get into that hype train. Alright, so first up on the hype train, we got the Better Late Than Never Game of Thrones Season 7. Should have already been midway into the season, and they delayed it to July, and I am glad they did after watching this trailer. What about you guys?
Yeah, Cersei, and hearing her voice,
it looks good.
It was awesome. Enemies to the north, to the south, to the east, and to the west. So you get a really good quick sense that the Lannisters are surrounded. So from the east, you know that Daenerys, the Targaryens are the ones that are coming from the east, and they're surrounding her because you saw Emilia Clarke and you also saw Dinklage. They showed a couple of quick scenes and that initial rising of the dragon, which, by the way, they're not kids anymore. So you're going to see full-out beasts in this season and the last season, which is really cool. From the west, you got to see Greyjoy. And you got to see his group with that nasty. Oh God, I hate the Greyjoy. I hate those guys. I hate those guys. They're just slimy. They're seriously slimy. It was kind of scary. From the south, you got to see the sharpening of the blade. So you get to see the Dornish person.
Yeah.
And so you got to see that. And then from the north, obviously. You got to see Arya, you got to see Maisie Williams, and of course, King of the North. So,
who is also a Targaryen.
Who's also a Targaryen. But you got to see Jon Snow, which, for anybody who watches Game of Thrones, like, and you have to be rooting for Jon Snow at this point. And so, you see Cersei is sitting on that map, right? And so, she must have had the map commissioned so that she can see where her enemies are. It's like that big floor plan. And it's like, okay, well, they're coming from here, 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 and here. And no matter where they come from, we're going to win. And she feels like that. But my thoughts are, Jesus, man, she's going to have to fight every one of these battles. And it's going to be a really tough battle. It's not like she's just going to mull over people in two of the three battles or, you know. So I'm curious
the
on
only
what...
thing that she's got going for her is if she still has a somewhat large supply of wildfire. Right. That is the only thing she's got going for her against all of these armies.
So in on the Iron Throne, right, you see the Mother of I'm kind of trying to get my thoughts together because of there's like so much going on. So you see the Mother of Dragons. Daenerys. Yeah, see Daenerys, Mother of Dragons.
Well, that's not the Iron
Throne. No, Iron Throne-like is what I was going to go for, is her version of the Iron Throne, which she feels like she is the, you know, she has the full right to whatever this is, and she's going to reconquer Westeros and take over the name and, you know, put the Dajarian name back on the map and whatnot. And so she's plotting with Tyrion, which is her biggest advantage is the fact that she has Tyrion on her side because he knows his brother and sister probably better than anybody. And so any move that she's going to make, he already in his head knows exactly what's going to go on. And then the other thing is how about the Dothraki parkour on the horses? What the hell was going on with that? Pretty awesome, right?
Yeah, that was awesome. I saw that and I was like, yes, this is cool as hell.
I was seeing him in full force again. Like at this, I'm like, oh, back to the Dothraki where they just take people's heads off and don't give a rat's ass. I love it.
Now, the other thing that I was curious about is, do we think that, I mean, because it's not taboo in Game of Thrones, do we think that Daenerys and Stark are going to wind up together? Or Jon. Do you think they're going to wind up together as a couple, or do you think they're going to wind up together as siblings?
I don't know if they'll end up together. I'm not sure. I don't.
At all?
I don't think they'll end up relationally together.
Season.
I don't think that.
Not in this.
No, I don't. I don't see it. One of the key pieces in that little trailer was what appears to be Tyrion knocking over the Lannister lion chess piece, which it could be just their version of the map. Because when you hear Cersei talk about the map, and she says from the north, from the west, and from the east and the south, the broken map is the map which I feel like is Tyrion's map, not her map. Like, I think it's their map, like what they've been using, because it has the broken pieces of the world.
Now, is Daenerys down where Brent, what is his name?
One of the Baratheons?
Brother. Yes. Where the oldest one was living at when she, right there on the ocean or whatever. When they're with the Lord of the Light or whatnot, is that the throne that where she's at?
I believe
right now,
that's where she's located. But I mean, again,
the only reason I say that is because the stone throne that she's on looks very similar to the cave that Baratheon was in at that point. Mm-hmm.
The other thing that you see is the Theon and Yara are joining up with Daenerys. So now she's got Theon, she's got Yara, she's got Tyrion and herself, obviously. So it's almost like a superpower. It's like a Justice League of game.
That was done at the end of last season.
It is, but you saw the ships going towards that. So now they're there, and everything is all set into place. And so she has everything that she needs in order to take these people out. So I feel like she feels at this point with that and the dragons, she's good to go. Like she tactically, she's all set. And then, of course, you see at the end, you know, the table, you see John and, you know, the whole king of when she says the North, they pan to him real fast. And then they kind of bring it back again. And then you see the most slimiest of characters in Game of Thrones, Littlefinger. And he's talking to her. And so he talks to her and he's like, well, you're the last standing between your brothers and your father. And I'm like, oh, shit. So now he's trying to pit her against Jon Snow, which is exactly what he's trying to do. And so
you're damn right.
You see a quick shot of Jon with Littlefinger. So it's one of two things. One, Jon's bitch slapping him and like, listen, I don't need you causing a rift between me and my half-sister. I don't really care what it is that she sees in you, but don't keep my name out of your mouth. Or it's Littlefinger saying, hey, by the way, do you know that you're half to Tyrion, do you know that? Just so you're aware. So it could be him telling him that he's a half-breed, or it could be Jon just beating the crap out of him for talking about him. So we're not really sure what it is, but one thing we do know for sure is that the statue that's behind them in that scene is Lenya Stark. That's who's this. So it's kind of like, it's ominous, like that she's looking down on, you know, everything that's going on in that particular right. picture. The other thing is, where's the blind brother? We don't know. We're kind of confused. We're not sure where he's landed yet. Could be, go ahead.
Holding the door.
He could be holding the door.
Hodor.
And then the other mystery is who's that hand that's coming out of the door frame?
Hodor.
You think that's Hodor? That hand looks so small that it doesn't look like a Hodor hand to me.
I was just saying, how would it be if Hodor came back as a White Walker? That would actually be kind of cool.
Big
who?
White
Walker. Exactly. Who I think the hand is Sir Jorah Mormont, the one who was friends with Daenerys, the one who had the disease on his arm and had all that other stuff.
Oh yeah,
scaling. And I think he's putting his hand through. And I think at the end of this, he could defend her one more time and come out of hiding. So I think that's who it is. And they have him caged up only because they're afraid of him giving that to somebody else. So I think that's who it might be. But again, total speculation on my end. Like, I don't know any more than anybody else. I'm just trying to piece stuff together here with a minute and whatever trailer, which, by the way, we're probably going to get, I would guess, at least two more before this starts in July. So... you'll probably get one dropped in another 2 weeks, and then another one about a week out, and then it'll be the full show. And if you're a fan of Geekologist Radio and you've heard any of our Westworld talk, you haven't seen nothing yet, because when it comes to Game of Thrones, it's game on. It's game on. I will be as passionate as I was in those episodes as passionate I am on Game of Thrones, because I get real excited.
We also, when we did our when we asked people what they wanted, it was voted that they wanted us to do episodes solely on Game of Thrones. We'll be doing minisodes.
I'm a big fan of keeping that out of our Geekologist podcast.
Because we can go on and on.
And go for 45 minutes on Game of Thrones and do it episode by episode by episode. If you don't know and you haven't listened to it, we have done a mega episode of Westworld. It's basically just a combination of chopped up bits of what we talked about. By the way, did not know that we talked about it for almost 3.5 hours. It was kind of crazy over the 10 episodes. But in listening to it back, and I just listened to it this week after Derek had put it together, Caucasian Saint, and Brandon here, they all kind of pieced together and put this thing together. It's funny. I'm screaming at myself as I'm listening. I'm like, you idiot. It is not the dog. It is not the dog. It's Bernard. He is the other person there. And so, like, it was really awesome to hear our thoughts. And in, like, the second and third episode, have ideas where we're like, oh, wow, we had it on the nose, like, that early, which is kind of cool. Yep. I mean, it's not that we're genius, and it's not that we haven't heard things from other podcasts or shows or websites or whatever. But when you stick to your guns and you kind of hold to your truths, and then you hear Derek, episode by episode by episode, literally say, Bernard is Arnold. Bernard is Arnold. And he, from episode like 2 on, and he does not waver.
And then the anagram, the anagram, when he brought that up.
He doesn't waver from that. And I'm like, man, that is awesome. And then to hear you talk about in like episode 4 about the other worlds, and at the end, we see the Shogun world and know that that's where this is going and that's how that's going to be. So for me personally, it's like watching us grow as a podcast and kind of getting excited about something that is very old, which I thought was really cool. It's like listening to, or, you know, watching Lost episodes again, where you get all pumped up. I kind of wanted to watch all the seasons of Westworld after listening to this podcast again. I realize it's super long.
Same here.
It's 3.5 hours. For most people, it is way too long. You have to piece it out, which is why Derek did what he did, and he pieced it out per episode, which is fantastic. But man, if you get an opportunity to listen to it, I would take advantage of it. It is a lot of fun. It's a cool ride, and we would hope that you would like to join with us.
There is currently an issue with that episode that I'm going to be fixing here within the next day or two. Apparently, Derek accidentally hit copy paste one too many times and accidentally pasted in the episode 8-9 segments twice into the episode, which added some extra time to it at the very, very end.
So if you listen to this thing in totality, it's roughly about 3 hours and maybe 15, 30 minutes. But again, remember, you're listening to 10 seasons. And we do combine a couple of episodes. 1 and 2 is combined together, and 8 and 9 is combined together. So it adds to the length of it, but the takes and the laughing and like the fact that we're over talking each other because we have so many theories, I think is ridiculous. It's funny. It reminds me of being at a bar with friends and you have so many ideas, you don't want to forget them. So you're trying to over talk somebody because you don't want to forget the idea that you just came up with of something that they just said. And it made me smile. It made me think of the best of what we do. And so if you have an opportunity to listen to that Westworld Megasode, I would definitely take advantage of it. One thing that we do that we can all agree on is Netflix is flipping amazing right now, and they're coming out with lots of good things. One thing that we just saw this week that we had talked about last week, just in kind of casual terms, was that Castlevania is going to be coming out for Netflix. They hit a teaser trailer on it. Faust, you want to give a conversation about that?
Yeah, originally we had said that we thought it was going to be a live action, but it's definitely not a live action. It is a very stylistic anime version of the tale post him killing Dracula is when this is all supposed to take place. The animation style looks absolutely fantastic. And just the little teaser that it gave us just grabs you by the head and just says, "You will watch me!"
The fact that they started this whole thing out with the old school 80s Nintendo.
That was insane. That was fantastic.
Perfect. It was just like, it grabs you by the balls and says, says, okay, if you're old enough to know what this is, you are going to watch me. And then the anime plays into the younger people who may not have known what this is are like, oh, hey, you know, I watch anime stuff. I'll watch this. But it was just, yeah, it really was. It really was good. And I'm so stoked for this. I would love for them to adapt some other content from like Nintendo and turn it into series.
We
like
talked
this.
About the fact that the group and the area that this was going to hit was guys or girls in their late 30s, early 40s, because they were that's when the Nintendo hit. And so to pull out an old NES classic and pop the game in and then go through the screens that you would go through and have the 8-bit graphics is exactly the people that it was trying to hit, which is what it did. Mm-hmm. To Faust's point, the reason why we know that this is post killing of Dracula is because at the end of the episode, they ask who he is. And he says, you know, the person who took down Dracula. So we know that that's already occurred. If you're trying to hit kids or people in their 20s and early 30s, anime is the way to go because that's what people watch. I mean, that's a very, very popular culture, and it's a very, very popular version of cartoon. So I think that they're doing right by going to anime. But the thing of it is people my age may not be into anime. So you have to be very careful on how you're portraying the characters and what you're doing in this cartoon, because I'm used to 80s classic He-Man and whatever, not right?
X-Men,
right? So anime to me is not the same as that. Now, I've grown up with it, so watching it is not a big deal to me, and I can watch that. But for some people, it's a very big leap. And so you just have to walk a fine line, I think. But all good things from Netflix. I think we're going to be starting to see reveal trailers for a lot of shows starting to come up, because Netflix, for me, is the summer killer, because there's not a lot of stuff that's on network television, and where they make their money is hitting a lot of really cool shows in the summer. We talked about the Women of Wrestling and GLOW, the Glamorous Ladies of Wrestling, and there's also going to be a few other shows. So don't sleep on Netflix, because that June, July, August is when they make their bacon, and that's how they kind of get you in and then to keep you along for the ride through the rest of the year. So keep an eye out.
House of Cards.
If you listen to us, I'm a big fan, and I don't attract easily to a lot of things. Like I'm always got salt someplace, but I'm a big fan of Netflix in general. I just think what they do is spot on. They hit cultural topics. So one of the big announcements that happened today, so when you guys hear this on Monday, maybe not such a big announcement, is that Beam announced that they are doing a lot of different things, including changing their names to something you might find at a bar called a mixer. I was going to – Faust, can you talk about some of the things that Beam is doing that are complete changes now in Mixer? Like what is Mixer doing that Beam wasn't doing?
They're adding hot dog, no hot dog.
No, they're not.
It's not hot dog.
No hot dog. Hot dog, no hot dog. No hot dog.
Seafood.
It's not hot dog. It's seafood. Octopus. Octopus, not VR. Anyways.
Just a puss?
So, one of the things they're doing is co-stream. No.
Okay.
Very bad boy. Very bad boy indeed. They're adding co-streams where you can have actually four streams running on one feed all at the same time. I do believe you have to be a pro member. Don't have to be partnered with them, but you do have to be a pro member, which I believe is like $5, $6 a month or whatever. You just get a lot of extra features.
Things like Ecologist Radio looks like I'm probably going to become a pro member.
Also, some of the other things is you have it's another version of Twitch in real life, but it's Mixer in
it's
real
actually,
life.
It's actually clearer than most of the Twitch streams I've seen in Twitch IRL.
That's because of the faster than light, whatever latency, zero latency.
Because today our buddy Abstracticus was streaming, just walking around his house in IRL, and so I was watching it that way, and yeah, it's really clear, and it's kind of funny just hanging out with him. It was him, and it was also another one of the guys from the Crow's Nest podcast was there. It was pretty cool.
The other thing they're doing with Mixer is they will be streaming the Xbox E3 briefing on June 11th in 4K ultra high definition with bonuses if you're signed in with Mixer.
I am not against Mixer. I think it's I like Beam/Mixer. The changing of the name seems to be very difficult when you're trying to brand something. I get why they're doing it. If they came out and said, listen, the reason why we're changing our name is because of lawsuits or issues over the name Beam and because of blah, 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 that I can buy.
Not just a Tuesday tweet saying, hey, guys, big announcement this Thursday.
The big announcement is to tell me that you can use this on mobile. Who will? I'm not going to walk around my house. I mean, anybody can walk around their house and FaceTime. Okay? Anybody that around their house can use Facebook Live. So this is not doing anything different that way. The fact that you can use four people on stream, that's a cool concept. But who has the PCs to do it? Are you paying a membership? So this is not for everybody crowd. And other than that, what else are we doing that's different? Because it all feels the same with a new name and just like one or two added little features that really don't feel like a lot.
Okay, so you don't actually need a PC to do it. If four people all have their Xbox, one of them's a pro member, the other one, that pro member can invite the other three to do a co-stream with that person. And all four of you can be streaming straight from your Xbox, straight to the one stream, and it'll show all four of you on the one stream versus each individual stream.
If you're Twitch, though, you haven't had to do anything. Your name's still the same. You can still you can add all these features, and you still have. It just feels like Twitch knows who they are, but Beam is still trying to figure out who they are.
That's just because they're the new kid on the block.
But you can't be everything to everybody.
They're trying to catch up, basically, is what it is. They're trying to fast track the catch up to Twitch.
And in that fast tracking process, to me personally, it feels like they still don't have an identity, because I don't think Mixer, like, if you looked at all your pro streamers this morning on Twitter, it was like, so now you're Mixer? What does that mean? Like, they don't even know what it means. They have no idea. They're not leaving ship from Twitch just to go to Beam, because there's no revenue service yet. There's no way for them to make money. So until they can make money, Mixer is not a viable option for people that are non-legit streamers who want to make cash. Twitch is where you want to go, at least from what I can gather for right now. So on a sadder note, we're big fans of the DC and Marvel Universe. And we've done a lot of sword wielding on anything DC currently, specifically Justice League, you know, making sure that it's what it should be. However, we did get some sad news about Zack Snyder. He is stepping down from Justice League, and they're moving on for the finishing touches of Justice League, which handing the reins over to Josh Whedon, if you had to hand it to somebody, I mean, you know, bless you, it's Josh Whedon, because you know he's going to put kid gloves on this. There was a death in Zack Snyder's family, his daughter, due to a tragedy, which we spoke about probably about 4 or 5 weeks ago when we talked about, we talked about an episode on Netflix. We'll just put it there. And it was a touchy subject about teens and suicide, and he had a tragedy in his family. And he made a decision to choose family over finishing this, which I think was, for me personally, like, if that was the choice and the decisions, when you're in the midst of things and you're doing things in your daily lives, you know, you're work focus, and then something happens in your daily life and you think to yourself, oh shit, like, I need to reprioritize what happens or what goes on in my life. And so this reprioritizing for him meant I'm taking a step back from everything that I do right now, and I'm making family my major focus. If that means I have to leave this and, you know, whatever, then that's what it is. And so for me personally, kudos to Zach for being able to find that, figure that, whatever it is. You know, thoughts and prayers to his family for their loss. And however this turns out for him, I just hope he finds whatever he is he's looking to find.
Okay, I really don't mean to sound like a gigantic asshole here, but I'm probably going to. I've got nothing but respect for him and for what he does. The problem that I have with this is that the suicide took place in March, and it took him until almost the end of May to make this decision. As a father, that decision should have came a lot sooner.
I can't argue that.
That's my opinion on it. Like I said, I've got mad respect for what he does and what he can do, you know, and everything that he does do, and that he did step down. I mean, I do respect that. I just think that that decision should have come sooner, because what's money? It's just money. Family is what is important.
My thinking on that, Fouts, is that decision could have easily came in March, and publicity-wise for the company, the talking about him stepping down could have came in May. So this easily could have been a decision that was a no-brainer for him immediately when it happened. And he could have said, listen, I'm walking. And they said, you're contractually obligated. However, obviously, we're going to let you do whatever it is that you want to do, but we're not going to announce this until X. To give you space and give you distance so that people aren't prying into your situation immediately when it happens and giving you a little bit of distance. Because obviously, you're going to have just absolute idiots on the internet. This is stupid. This movie's going to suck now. Why wouldn't you stick around? Blah, blah, blah. You know, having no respect for him or his family. And so trying to buy him a little bit of time in that process. That's my hope. And that's where I think this might lie, because it would make the most business sense, you know, and that's sad to say in this situation. But as a business, you have to think about in that terms. And it could have been the fact that Whedon couldn't take over until X date, and so they don't want to announce when somebody else is taking it over until he was freed up in order to take it over. The other thing, and trying to transition, is if you're a fan of Rockstar or Take-Two, I'll just say Rockstar in general, I'll leave Take-Two out of this, you know that if Rockstar gives you a date for a game, you can be as sure as the day is long that whatever date they tell you, it's not going to be the date.
Add 6 months.
In this case, I'm going to say add a year, because I really feel like Red Dead Redemption in spring, not a good idea. And
not March.
March. Still don't think it's coming out. I don't think it's going out till fall. But they're saying fiscal year, which, Damien, that would not fall into place with March. It would start as of April. It would start as of April.
You're right.
Of 2018, all the way until March of 2019. So anytime between April and March of 2019, it can come out. I really feel like this is going to be a fall announcement. I also feel like if you are Battlefront or the Fracture But Whole or Far Cry 5, I'm rattling off a bunch of Ubisoft games. Perfect, sweet. EA games, sweet. You like literally, they were dancing Darth Vaders from EA reps because you were clearing the space. For me, as a Destiny fan, oh, thank God. I mean, that, because now I can just play Destiny and I don't have to think about a game in the fall. I can just play Destiny for a while because that's what I want to do. But as a person who has to talk about games, I've got to play other games. So, but then I don't want to be behind in my light level. So I can just play Destiny and I'm good and it makes me happy. And so I think it clears a lot of space for a lot of people because if you don't want to be in Rockstar's way.
Yeah, with this coming out, like I'm a huge fan of Red Dead Redemption. The guys from Nerdentials, I can tell you, we used to have LAN parties and stuff like that, getting together and just playing that game alone, just in the open world. It was amazing, and this one will be no different. That being said, when I heard that it was being delayed, I actually got all excited because I have way too many games coming out this holiday season to be playing. And I know that Destiny is going to be my main squeeze. Well, it's going to be having to play 50-50, I think, to Sea of Thieves. But even still, those two are going to be my babies. And it would have been hard to have brought in Red Dead.
I'm going to tell you one thing. You're going to be on a ship by yourself because while you're on that ship, I'm going to be on a ship with a bunch of warlocks, titans.
And we also got games coming out, like The Calling is coming out in July, and that's going to be on preview. And it is like a more arcadey version of Battlegrounds, but it'll still be, I'm definitely going to be playing that one as well as Battlegrounds, which will probably, I'm guessing, is going to be on E3.
All right, so next up, we got a Far Cry 5 announced with a teaser trailer and a very iffy poster. Chris, tell us all about it.
As far as the Far Cry announcement, the teaser trailer showed Montana, and it just gave you like a basic overview. They released it 2 days ago for us, which would be on Tuesday. And you got a photo or a video of the church with the bell and just kind of the widespread open space, which was kind of very cool. And then it just cut, which when I saw it, I'm like, oh, shit, this is just a Red Dead trailer. Like, this is, you're just showing me environmental stuff. A day and a half later, they post the Last Supper poster with the American flag and the protagonist, which if you are a fan of Far Cry, every poster is a picture of the protagonist on the front of every one of them. They never put the antagonist, which I think is really great because it gives you an idea of where the game is going. And in this one, it showed a bunch of what appeared to be white supremacists, very similar to Far Cry 3, at least as far as premise is concerned and character-wise. And it gave the feeling of, basically, because this is based in America, by the way, first time ever on U.S. soil. Everything is usually on foreign soil when you're doing Far Cries. Of people trying to take over, or almost a cult, you know, trying to take over in that area. And so feelings of, this is where America is right now. This is a very relative topic. I'm curious on how far Ubisoft goes down this rabbit hole. They went down a similar rabbit hole with Watch Dogs 2, but to a point, and then they stopped. In order for this game to be successful, they are literally going to press the limits on what it is that they're trying to say politically and economically in this game. Because if they don't, people will criticize them for falling short on it and only half-assing what they're trying to say.
Yeah, they've got to go all in on it.
Well, a lot of the story seems very recycled from a game that got canceled by Ubisoft for being considered to be too harsh for the times, which was Rainbow Six Patriots, which followed an individual who actually united all the militias. And it was, they said, oh, it's homegrown terrorism. Well, this, I'm sorry, you see a guy in the church, the church bells being rang, and it's being rang because some guy's bashing some guy's head into the church.
Yeah, it's pretty scary stuff. And it's scary more because it's real. Like, yeah. It could actually happen. And so tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock, we're going to get the first trailer. People have already seen this game, so I know that Gamertag Radio is announcing it. IGN has stuff going on. Everybody's has seen this game. It wasn't a secret. The non-secret is the fact that it's actually coming out in the fall of this year at some point. So I think we'll have a little bit more to say next week when you hear our podcast. But there's a lot going on with Far Cry 5. I think they're really hyped into it. I'm a big fan of Far Cry. I have owned the last three. Aside from survival, like I own, you know, Far Cry 3, Far Cry 4 for sure. Both really, really good games. So I would be excited if I were you for the series, but I would also be cautious. Again, it's a game that we don't know a ton about, and because it's going into a new environment, that could change, you know, what people's perception of the game for sure. So let's talk about Tom Holland.
Dude, the guy's on fire now with Sony.
We saw him in the Spider-Man 3 trailer, the newest one, right? Which led a little more credence to the Iron Man Spider-Man suit.
That's turned inside out. That's the suit inside out.
Also, it's not Spider-Man 3. It's Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah. I said Homecoming, right?
No, you said Spider-Man 3.
Oh, well. Spider-Man Homecoming. But you saw this Tony Stark version of the suit. When he hits the button, and it says you have over 500 variations of spider webs, and he thought that was kind of cool. The hug thing was there for like the 18th time again, like the whole
at least 20th.
Yeah, come on now. We gain a little more of what's going on with the antagonist because we find out that they're stealing. You know, and the Avengers, we talked about the fact that weapons, anything that was destroyed by the Avengers is what they're grasping after, and that's what they're using for the weapons. So we gain that, which is, we kind of had it on the periphery, but it's now like an official thing. And we also get a little bit more, I guess, personal with Peter, with the Cheeros, and like he's basically trying to find his way into being a superhero. He asks if he's going on another, you know, assignment with the with the Avengers. Yeah, welcome to my world. I'm thinking of Wonder Woman already. He's part of the Stark internship, which I thought was interesting too. That's what they referred to. It just feels, I know too much about this movie. I know beat for beat the first two things, you know what I mean? Like, movies are based upon 1, 2, and 3, right? The opening, the middle, and the end. I already know the opening and the middle. I'm severely frustrated about that. Stop showing me trailers. Stop. Like, I get that they're required to. Just rerun the same shit over and over. Stop showing me new stuff. I don't want a new stuff. There's another trailer that just came out with the first-person perspective of Spider-Man from when he was at the final battle in the last Avengers movie. And it's like, look, I'm about to jump. Look, this is the part where he asked me and for the shield. And I'm like, stop, 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 stop. I've seen it. I don't want to see any more.
Yep.
Because you've ruined Spider-Man for me. Spider-Man Homecoming is ruined.
100% agree. So... Lawbreakers announced for PS4 and PC on Steam, I believe. $30 price tag. And the game actually looks
basically like an Overwatch clone. And I've heard a lot of people compare it to that. And one of the YouTubers that I watched is in the beta for it. And he has the game playing in his background while he's talking about different tech things that he's reviewing and news that's being played and things like that. And so I've gotten to see some of the gameplay, and a lot of the characters are extremely similar. I did get to watch the trailer for Lawbreakers, and the trailer makes it look just as fun, if not more fun, than what Overwatch was. Granted, it was a cinematic trailer that I watched and not a gameplay trailer, so that could lead to some misconception in the actual game.
Yeah, this was this game, man, Cliff Bleszinski's been working on this game for like a really long time. The last two, he's been in Seattle at the last two PAX events. However, he's been doing things a little interesting with his things. He, instead of going to the actual PAX event, he rents out a bar and just turns it into like a, he rents out a nightclub and turns it into his own little mini events and will shuttle people to him. It seemed to work out for him in his favor. And at first, I hate the fact that it's considered to be a clone, because it's almost like the same thing. Like if you have to do a first person shooter and it involves war, you'd be always compared to Call of Duty. This is very similar in the game style aspect of it, but at the same time, like, unless you're Paladins, I mean, give it a chance. This game's different enough that it doesn't, that Paladins to me feels and plays like a straight up clone to Overwatch. This one, there's got some other elements, like with the rope swinging and things like that. Fouts?
One of the characters that this YouTuber was playing is almost an identical copy to an Overwatch character.
Are you talking about Genji?
No. Pharah, what's her name? The Egyptian chick.
Oh, okay.
She has
a
rocket. She goes up in the air. She has pretty much basically a grenade launcher that she lobs things. And that's exactly what this character was basically doing. It was like a cross between her character and Junkrat's.
I mean, the thing about hero shooters, as it is now a genre, is it's going to be a genre that if you try to get into, it's going to be hard to differentiate yourself from the competition, because everybody's going to go to the big leagues, and the big leagues, anything that anything that Blizzard puts out is going to be like considered the god mode. You know, and that's the hard thing.
Well, technically, Blizzard and Bungie are partners.
Yeah. So, okay, I get you. Yeah, that's probably why I was thinking it. We'll just go that route.
Probably. But anyways, moving on from this copycat game, Silicon Valley Season 5 has been officially renewed, and Mr. TJ Miller will not be there.
Neither will I.
I'm a little upset about this. Yeah. I believe you are too, Chris.
Yeah, I won't be there either. So if he's not there, I'm not there, because I don't think this show has legs without him.
I'm gonna give it a chance, but I don't have very high hopes for it.
This makes it hard for me. Like, I started picking up and watching it again just last night, and I was all excited about, because I love TJ Miller, and I love his comedy and everything else. And so to have him vacating his role. And you guys have already said that this season's kind of been a roller coaster
at best,
a little bit.
Yeah.
It feels like he saw this coming, and if he's stepping aside, it makes it really hard for me to want to actually go through. I know that I should experience the series, but it's hard to experience that knowing that it's going to continue without him. You know what I mean? Because that being an actor, like, I've liked this actor since his role in Cloverfield, which a lot of people don't even know that TJ Miller is the cameraman in Cloverfield, because he only shows his face like 3 times in that movie.
This is what typically happens to people when they get about 4 or 5 seasons into a show and they feel like they've grown the character, you know, literally as far as they can grow it. And so at that point, a lot of people start peeling back. It depends on who it is that's in that show. It's him in this one. And that's where you see, like, things start to go different directions and things start to go a little haywire, which is why I expect things to not be the same for Silicon Valley. Can they make this up? Sure. But will they? That's the big key. And I honestly think he being one of the core four, especially since, I mean, crap, it was at his house initially. That's how this started. It's going to make it really, really difficult for them to catch back up.
This could be foreshadowing as spoilers for the season, depending on how they want to write him out of the series. Because, like, right now we know that he's, what's his name? Thomas Middleditch's character is working on the new internet. If for some reason this completely succeeds and he's successful with it, he becomes rich, TJ Miller's character will get, what was it, 5% of the company assets. So he could just pack up and leave. And that's how they could write him out of the series.
Hmm. But I don't know. Time will tell.
So John Wick 3, basically what's happened is they're already, it's the part 3 of the John Wick shoot 'em up saga. They're just going full speed ahead with this. They're about halfway through the script already. And as of everything right now, the target date for the release is an early 2019 release. It actually could be moved up to a late 2018 release with how quick everything's coming together.
I think that's pushing it. I think they need to take their time and make it live up to the first and the second one. Don't rush it.
They're saying that they're saying everything is just perfect right now. It's just like everything's the story, everything's coming together, and they said it's like butter, and that's cool to hear, you know, because you know that Keanu Reeves is extremely invested in this character. I mean, he is John Wick. He
is the only character he can play at this point. So he's a
no. We have Bill and Ted
exactly
number 3 coming out. We have Bill and Ted number 3 coming out. That's gonna be awesome. Same exact
character with just a ocean voice tone. Dude, shut the f- up. Dude, shut the f- up. Like, I mean, it's really like they're the same thing. It's the same.
I'm pretty stoked about the fact of it. And I any chance I get to see Keanu Reeves do martial arts, because he is a really good martial artist, I enjoy it. Although Young Khan might come on and slap me for that.
Young Khan, just so you know, Damien's opinions are his own and they do not reflect the rest of this podcast.
Shout out to Young Khan, who's going to be on a new podcast soon.
Yes, he is.
The Destiny Content Creators, I believe it's called.
Yeah,
right?
It's pretty awesome. It's all the guys, a couple of guys from formerly from Aim Assist, who are going to be hopping in back into Destiny and having conversations about it. Young Khan was asked to be invited to that group, and dude has a shit ton of takes. He's got a lot of investment in that community, has a lot to say, is amazing with graphic arts. So if you are a fan of Young Khan like we are, please hop into that podcast, give it a listen, because he's going to have a lot of good information, and obviously his artwork is off the chain.
Exactly. Next up, we have another. We've been talking a lot about Netflix tonight, guys. Netflix original series, Friends from awesome. College.
Awesome. I literally was in tears after you had me watch the teaser trailers. There were 5 teaser trailers, and Fred Savage is in this, first of all. So if you're a person like of my age, Wonder Years, I know exactly. Fred Savage intimately because of Wonder Years. He was at the same age that I was when I was growing up, and it was interesting. But to watch him think he's doing Adderall and then he's literally sniffing coke is what? And then watch him to do a second line. Okay, I'm done after the second one.
I'm done.
That's the last one, which was really good. And then
they throw pizza on the wall. It's like the pizza is like waiting for it to come.
The guy's like, I have a doctor's appointment in the morning. And then the pizza drops and they're like, yes. It reminds me of being in my fraternity house. That's the kind of shit we used to do. Super excited to watch this. And if it has anything to do with that kind of stuff,
That's exactly what it has to do with. It has to do with all these college friends that are having a hard time dealing with being in their 40s. So this is literally a series for our generation. This is us, and it's just looks so dang good. I mean, to have each of those trailers, those teaser trailers, each one have you laugh out loud. You know, that's great. Like, that is something that, you know, there's a lot of comedies will go too far on one direction and it kind of loses the audience. This looks like it knows, it realizes what it is, and it is going directly for it. I would actually be curious, you know, with knowing Fred Savage as more of a producer nowadays and writer, I wonder how many of these episodes, if any of them, he actually was behind.
I'm sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious. IMDb doesn't say anything yet, so
I would definitely be interested. I would guesstimate as him being one of the lead characters who people recognize, he'd have a lot more say so. But
yeah.
In any case, I watched the 5 teaser trailers. All of them were funny as hell. I'm in.
Oh, and yeah.
This comes out on July 17th. That whole month of July is going to be insane.
Actually, one of the teaser trailers said July 14th. If you looked at it, so it said July 14th as the corrected date.
Either way, though, that whole 2-week span is going to be insane just with everything coming out.
I know. It's going to be nuts. The episodes may have to be cut
for sure
into 2 with all the stuff we're going to want to talk about.
For sure.
Or just really long.
Let's head into This Week in Geek.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
So This Week in Geek, we have a very special week, especially not having one last week because our episode went so long and some granny decided to come in and crash the party on us. But so first up on This Week in Geek, May 25th, 1977, the motion picture Star Wars is released in 32 U.S. theaters. The film will immediately break records unlike any before it, essentially becoming the first blockbuster in history. The film's unprecedented use of special effects sparked a revolution of movies using technology-based visual effects. Perhaps the film's greatest contribution to technology was the creation 2 years earlier of the company Industrial Light and Magic, which is still leading special effects house in the industry.
The reason why we're bringing this all up is This Week in Geek is 40 years on Star Wars. And so it kind of brought nostalgia back to everybody today, at least in our world, that had stories, ideas, thoughts, feelings, wherever they were when they remember their first opportunity to speak about Star Wars. And so that's why we're talking about it today.
Another thing that Star Wars came up with was Chloe Dykstra, if you know her from social media, her last name is where she gets her fame from, which was her father. And her father created the cameras that allowed them to film the ships flying through space and not show the strings. So when you're watching Star Trek, when you're watching any of those things back in the day and you don't see the strings, that is because of Star Wars.
And on May 21st, 1980, the sequel to the smash success Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, was released on that day. And almost exactly 3 years to the release of the original film, the pioneering use of the special effects technology in Star Wars trilogy transformed movie history.
May 25th, 1983. The third installment in the original Star Wars trilogy, Return of the Jedi, is released 6 years to the day after the first Star Wars movie. Return of the Jedi continued to raise the bar in special effects technology that its predecessor set. The film's final space battle, for example, was of a size and scale unprecedented at the time.
Yeah, if you look at all three of these, they're released 3 years apart, almost to the dime. And if you look at what Star Wars is doing now, the sequels are released 2 years to the date. So they're still keeping up with that tradition of releasing in a timely fashion where people don't forget and there's enough time in between that people can have conversations about it.
All right. So I think that's going to do it for us this week on episode 40 of Geekologist Radio. Let's go through and where can we find everybody at? Damien.
Contrary to what little granny said, you can't find me on the Woody Bus, but you can find me on Twitter at Mr. Damien Nash, also manning the Geekologist Radio Twitter late nights at Geekologist Radio minus the T for character restrictions. Articles coming up on Rectify Gaming, Queued Up Media, and Geekologist Radio. I'm going to start writing up some stuff for that again here soon. Next week, we will have a review, an audio review, and there will be an article written up for the game Friday the 13th. The guys over at Gun Media have been kind enough to issue us a review copy, and I'm going to be going deep into that shit.
You know, that's not the first time that you've gone deep into something in this last week. I don't know what you're talking about not being on that Woody bus. I still got the articles of clothing that you left all over that with that tiny package.
Chris, where can we find you?
You can find me at anything on Twitter or on Facebook at IAMGROOT. I am Groot. You can find me on Geekologist Radio at IamGroot.com, at Geekologist Radio, and I am Groot at Ninja Pancake. So I am Groot.
Speaking of Ninja Pancake, you can we talked a little bit about Castlevania and for the Netflix series here recently. Geeks Watch, the podcast on there, did an entire episode about the original Castlevania. Great episode. If you like Castlevania or want to learn a little bit more about the series before this Netflix episode show comes up, go give it a listen. Great episode.
The Belmonts are honestly a really twisted family. I'm just going to say it's kind of some Game of Thrones stuff going on there.
It gives the Lannisters a run for their money.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Brandon. You can find me on Twitter at bfouts82. And for this episode, I think we are meowt.